Houston, we are go for launch.
This is Space Talk, a weekly program that highlights America's space program and what's new in space flight from around the globe. And now, with the past, present, and future of space exploration, here is Jim Behnke.
Greetings from Florida's Space Coast, home of the most skilled aerospace workforce in America. I'm Jim Behnke, and this is the February 9th, 2013 edition of Space Talk, live on the air right here on WMMB. Well, here we are again, gathered together for another hour of discussion about our nation's space program. So glad to have you join us on this first weekend after the big Super Bowl. It means I have no more football to watch. What will I do with myself tomorrow? Speaking of which, how about those Ravens? They didn't win by as much as I thought they would, which was by at least 10 points, which it certainly appeared for a long time they would, at least until the power went out. You know, not to make too much of a space-related stretch here, but I wonder if solar power satellites beaming their energy directly to the Superdome would have made a difference. Perhaps a topic for another day. Speaking of what's on tap on Space Talk today, I'm pleased to report that Carol Craig, the president of Craig Technologies, is in the studio today and will tell us about some of the work her company is doing here on the Space Coast and around the nation. We'll get to her in just a few moments, of course. And then later in the program, we'll check in with the local launch forecast and hear Carol's answers to my five questions during today's edition of Terminal Count. At the end of the program, we might even have a surprise guest at the end of the show as well. Well, not that big of a surprise, but you can still look forward to it. As always, we welcome and appreciate any thoughts, questions, comments you might have about what we're discussing or anything having to do with our space program. Give us a call at 321-768-1240. Or if you prefer, you can send us an email. The address is spacetalking@aol.com. Well, now it's time for my more or less weekly broadcast blog, Orbital Inclinations. A couple of weeks ago or so, I had the rare privilege of being on TV for about 5 seconds. My brief, far short of 15 minutes of fame appearance was part of a WFTV Channel 9 news report by Vanessa Welch about NASA and its foray into the world of computer apps and gaming. I should say up front for the record that working with Vanessa on this was a completely enjoyable experience. She was professional, accessible, interested in discussing both sides of the story, and generally just a very friendly person. Well, as I prepared for the story, I saw the notes that she sent me were mostly taken from Republican Senator Tom Coburn of Oklahoma, who is known for publishing an annual waste book in which he calls out examples of wasteful government spending, at least in his opinion. Now, I'm not saying there isn't waste in government. We know there is. And, of course, not every project is a smart use of tax money. But with these waste book kinds of lists, they are almost always classic cases of pulling out single line items in a budget that makes great headlines, but almost always misses the big picture of why they are in the budget in the first place. For example, Senator Coburn's list last year noted an expense of $325,000 to create a robo-squirrel to test the interaction between a fake squirrel and a real snake. And he mentioned nearly $1 million to see if a male fruit fly would be more attracted to an older female fruit fly than a younger one, or vice versa. Both sound weird, but who knows? But what Channel 9 was choosing to highlight was the senator's inclusion of NASA's efforts to develop mobile computer apps, fund massive multiplayer online gaming, and cooperate in producing content for an online radio station that featured new and alternative musical groups. Vanessa was looking for someone to say on camera that they agreed this was a waste. The problem was, not only did I not think this was a waste, I felt that most of the facts in Senator Coburn's waste book entry about NASA were either wrong or grossly misleading. Now, since she still needed someone on the pro side to say something on camera, We agreed to meet anyway and do an interview. She had no problem with me being a NASA contractor, and it was made very clear to her that I was not speaking for the agency. We wound up meeting at Spaceview Park in Titusville and talked at the base of the Mercury Monument replica that is on display there along the Indian River. We chatted for a few minutes off camera, exchanged pleasantries about our families, and, well, then we did our camera interview. When we were done, I took off, and she and her cameraman hung around at Spaceview Park, and then they went over to the Astronaut Hall of Fame to get some man-on-the-street comments. A week later, Vanessa's piece ran on the 5 p.m. newscast, and when I saw it, I just shook my head. Now, it didn't really bother me that the story was decidedly slanted against NASA, or that of all the time I spent helping with the story and driving up to Titusville from Melbourne, they only used about 5 seconds of what I said. That was kind of expected. What bothered me most was how this story represents so much of what's wrong with our local news media, and maybe the national news media, and frankly, with an audience that soaks up all the dribble and hype without question. Now, what I'm about to complain about isn't specifically Vanessa's fault in terms of this story, by the way. I think this is just the way the news business is. Let's break it down. First, the story started with the phrase, WFTV has learned NASA is investing hundreds of thousands of dollars into video games and apps. Sounds dramatic, doesn't it? WFTV has learned. Now, usually that means they saw a story somewhere else and thought it would be a good idea to do their own version. But mostly, it's just unnecessary hype. Who cares if you've learned something? You're a news media organization. That's your job. Just start out saying NASA is investing hundreds of thousands of dollars. Oh, yeah, that's the next thing. Hundreds of thousands. Now, oh, my, that sure sounds like a lot of money. I'm sure we could all use a few extra hundreds of thousands of dollars. But within a budget for NASA of some $18 billion, or a federal budget numbering in the trillions, that is barely a drop in the bucket. After presenting some conflicting information about exactly how much NASA is spending, including another line of hype when Vanessa says a private company told Nine Investigates, which adds nothing to the story, we see and hear from the first person who is considered one of the critics of this effort. His name is John Flynn, a senior citizen who I'm sure is a nice enough guy, but whose only claim to any expertise about the subject is that he is a taxpayer and he happened to be in the right place at the right time while biking around Spaceview Park so Channel 9 could interview him. Mr. Flynn tells Vanessa that the games and apps are, quote, not a good idea. They already did space. They can't go any farther. Now, when I first saw that, I didn't know whether to laugh or cry. NASA has already done space? What does that mean? I don't know. Now, my turn in the interview came seconds later, and to be fair to Vanessa, with my words and Mr. Flynn's, she can honestly say and report to her fellow journalists that she represented both sides of the story. A few moments later, we rocket into our big finale, Vanessa choosing to end her objective, unbiased story by saying, while some taxpayers think the public-private partnership is a win-win, not everyone is convinced. And then we see a relatively animated Mr. Flynn, our senior citizen friend, who I doubt has ever played any of the NASA games, telling us it isn't going to work. You can spend all you want. At least when the story finished, Channel 9 co-anchor Bob Opsahl looked at the camera and gave one of those ad-lib lines saying, pretty neat, though. So in three words, Bob completely undermined all the hype of the story in the first place. While I actually appreciated it, I also underscores the problems I have with news in general. Now, just to be clear here, let me make sure I state my position. NASA's work to cooperate with other companies and spend some of its own budget money on developing computer apps is absolutely appropriate and necessary to the overall goals of space exploration that NASA is charged with accomplishing. We're reaching younger kids with important stuff that's going to inspire them to pursue science and technology and math that's going to lead to those careers that are so important to the future of our space program, and that's Orbital Inclinations. Carol Craig joins us after we take this first break. I'm Jim Bank. You're listening to Space Talk on WMMB.
Space Talk is back in a minute. Call Jim now at 768-1240. If it's happening in space, Jim Behnke is there. Okay, well, not in space, but he's all about it. This is Space Talk on WMMB.
Welcome back to Space Talk, everyone. 321-768-1240, the number to call to participate in the program today. You can also send your questions or comments in an email to spacetalking@aol.com. Well, I'm so pleased to have in the studio with me today Carol Craig. She is the founder, president, CEO, CFO, perhaps some other acronyms, all that not necessarily in that order, of Craig Technologies, based here on the Space Coast, but certainly with a reach around the nation. Since I've become aware of her through our mutual association with the National Space Club Florida Committee, I have been impressed by her achievements and her willingness to embrace this new era of space and defense and technology in the post-space shuttle era. And today we're going to hear her story. Carol Craig, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, Jim.
And I remind you, just as close as you can without actually kissing the microphone.
Kissing the microphone, that's right. Okay, or sneezing on it or something
sneezing
like that,
on
right?
That's
got
right.
It.
Thank you. You know, I often say I can tell how well Bill Mick's doing on quitting smoking by how well I can smell the from his microphone here. Well, let's talk about you. Tell us who you are. I mean, and also tell us who you are from the perspective that if you go to your website and look at About You, you start with a line that says references the Kelly McGillis character from Top Gun, which I think is just a great way to get into it. So with that tease, tell us about your and how you, where you come from.
Okay. Well, like you said, the founder and CEO of Craig Technologies and a whole lot of other things. And just a little background, on Craig Technologies. We're a federal contracting firm, small business, and we support a number of government customers. And I started the company pretty much in my kitchen. My background is engineering.
Yeah.
Although I don't think I'm a good engineer. I might be good at business, but I'm not a good engineer. But I started that. And part of my ADD, ADHD background ties to flying in the Navy. And that's where the Kelly McGillis kind of came from.
Yeah.
I was an engineer for the Department of Defense and I designed cockpit systems and kind of was giving briefs to all these guys in their flight suits. And then I decided I wanted to be one of those in those flight suits too. And that kind of started my progression into military, all this background, and then, you know, rolled into having my own business.
Well, did you fly then? Or
I did. I was a naval flight officer in P-3s for a few years.
For P-3s, wow.
P-3s, yeah, what? Really not an attractive aircraft.
It's, no, you know, no, lumbering and
yeah,
heavy and,
no,
you know,
sexy
and all
stories
that
at all, no, about that.
No, no diving bombing anybody,
no,
or buzzing the tower with P-3s.
No, I tell stories about getting up, going back, putting something in the microwave, going to the bathroom, come back, sit back down. That's pretty much all that's involved.
No hurricane hunting with those, with
no,
your particular aircraft?
No, rigging ships a little bit. I was stationed in Barbers Point, Hawaii, so yeah, we got to see, like, beautiful scenery, but that was pretty much it.
That was about it. So,
yeah.
Well, so what attracted you to all this this flight in space? I mean, why is there interest in your world for all this kind of stuff?
Well, there's a couple different reasons. Personally, I've always been interested in space. I've been more into robotics, you know, the idea of robots someday would rule the world, and I wanted my own little robot. So
right.
I always was fascinated with NASA. But we moved down here in 2004, and part of the reason I moved down here is because I saw Harris, NASA, all these opportunities. Didn't really have much of the company going, still maybe 10 people. And I just kept seeing, you know, this would be something cool. Really was all, you know, it wasn't anything brilliant. It was, wow, this would be great. Engineering, it's the future, you know, that kind of
but
thing.
Why the space coast? Especially when you say that you're interested in robotics and technology, most people would immediately gravitate toward California, JPL, and Silicon Valley up by the Ames Research Center further north. Space Coast is all launch operations and engineering and tanks and boosters and fire in the flame trench.
It was actually more about the community.
Was it really?
It really was. It, you know, came down here with my husband on vacation. We, you know, and we actually for the first time got to see the shuttle returning with the
on top of the Submariner 7.
Yeah, exactly. And that probably was what solidified it. We're standing on the beach watching this thing. It looked like it was straight across from us. I thought, oh my gosh, this is awesome. But then as you look around the community, we've lived all over. There's a lot going on in California. Way busy, way fast. Here, it just felt more of a community and kind of felt, you know, like it would be a good home. And that's really the reason.
Before we start talking about your use of the old shuttle logistics depot down at Cape Canaveral, talk a little bit more about the company. You know, we say Boeing, we think one thing, clearly, with its long history. Lockheed Martin, you know, in terms of shuttle, we think external tank. And Boeing was, you know, the vehicle from Rockwell's history and the engines and all that. We think Craig Technologies is kind of new. We don't really know what to do. Basically, the question obviously becomes, what do you do?
What do we do? Yeah. Well, we're more of a services company. Not, you know, some people use the term staff augmentation. You know, I don't like to use that. And we're not a staffing company. It's really services. We're supporting the customer, but we're involved internally as a company. Our director's levels isn't just put someone in place and then move away. So we've got a variety of roles when it comes to space, whether that's software development or requirements engineering, budgeting, scheduling, and we're on six different sites. About 50% of our work is NASA now. Didn't used to be as I was growing the company, but now we've kind of got a real nice foothold, and it's important enough to us.
Talk about some more about the history of the company again. You said you started in your kitchen, basically.
Started in my kitchen.
How did that work?
Actually, it's pretty good. I had just had my first child who has a disability, and so it was kind of nice to be able to, you know, work from home and not have to go anywhere. And to be honest, I could see, because I'm an engineer and technology is my friend, I could see that there was no reason that I couldn't have a small company that could be nationwide or could reach out and be distributed and still be right out of my kitchen. So I ended up doing that. And also, I kind of started on the healthcare side. I was doing legacy data migration, COBOL code, kind of boring stuff, and then discovered all these set-asides where I'm woman-owned, obviously.
Right.
Service-disabled veteran, because I had some issues with the military. And then also, I'm Cuban. So there's something called 8A, which is the minority. When you start to put all that in place, kind of gives you a little bit of an advantage. I mean, gets you in the door.
Right.
Doesn't mean you're going to succeed.
Right.
But I kind of decided, maybe I'll turn this into a real company.
Okay. Okay, so you started in, what year was it, 2000?
Actually, 1999,
incorporated as a consultant.
But really started the real company, if you want to call it that, in about 2003.
I think it's hard. It might be hard for people to grasp this services-oriented stuff. I mean, we want to think about bending metal and welding and all of that, as opposed to, well, I'll send you my payroll and you do it for me, or, you know, I have to do this engineering study. What does that mean?
That's the services side of it. It's really, and it is kind of augmenting, you know, civil service or government individuals there as well, but it's just providing additional human capital.
Is it a capability that they don't have, that you're filling a niche kind of in a way, or?
Filling needs, maybe.
Needs?
In many cases, yes. I think that's the case. And so,
cheaper for a company to hire you than to bring on someone full-time?
I believe so. And a lot of that is because of our structure as a company. We're a small business. We keep our costs low.
Right.
But yes, we're the ones that then have to deal with a lot of the extra things that go along with having personnel, whether it's the HR and, you know, whatever else it may be.
Looking at the clock, I want to save the majority of our time after the break to talk about the Aerospace Defense Manufacturing Center. Let's talk more about the company in terms of, you're here on the Space Coast, but you have a national reach. Does that mean you have offices or just contracts elsewhere, or how does that work?
That's right. So we're in 20 different states, which for the most part is individuals that are either working out of their house or they're working on site with customers.
Yeah.
But we also have offices. One thing I didn't do was just stand up fancy offices, because that's overhead that would take away from employees. So we've got a couple strategic offices, Huntsville and elsewhere, but for the most part, it's individuals that are in place there.
And are these engineers, these accountants, these are managers?
Everything. You know, engineering and technical services means a whole lot of different things, right?
Right.
So I've got network engineers, I've got database administrators, courseware developers, everything you can imagine, software developers, all kinds.
Trying to offer a little bit of a commercial for the Space Coast, you mentioned the community and off on a tangent in my head here, I noticed on your website you've got, I wish I could remember all the words, family and community and kind of, I don't know if it's not quite your mission statement, but certainly a motto of some kind. Talk about those words, because I think it's very instructive to why you maybe picked Space Coast and why we fit in with all those.
Right. Those are the core values: family, integrity, loyalty, passion, and community. And
Phillips. I tried to work out an acronym, and
I know.
It was no good.
I did the same thing. I should have thought about it better. It could have been Flipsy or something, but no.
T-shirts and patches for everybody.
Exactly. We put those in place actually when we were only about a couple of years old, and my husband had come to me and said, hey, you need some sort of core values or something that you can remember as the company grows. And so he had me kind of decide, you know, he actually had a friend of mine who's working for me do the same exercise, put in order your four most important. We ended up with the exact same four.
Yeah.
But those four, family, integrity, loyalty, passion, we've now added a fifth one because of Brevard County, community.
Community.
We realized how important it is. And you look around in Brevard, everyone, almost everyone, is about the community and realizes how important it is to us every day. It's not just about, you know, yourself, the team.
You very much embrace that. And one of the things that's interesting about your company is, again, when we talk about the post-shuttle era, and everyone thinks, well, we're dead here, and we're not doing anything here, and we're just sitting around twiddling our thumbs, and, oh, yeah, we shoot off an occasional launch every once in a while, but there's nothing going on. Why do we want to be here? and yet you represent a company, and I don't know if it's fair to call you a new space company like SpaceX. We think of SpaceX or some of the others, but you've embraced this in a way that you're growing, you're taking over. Well, I shouldn't say taking over. It's like you're growing your fiefdom or your royal kingdom or whatever.
Kind of like that.
But, well, we'll talk about it. But you have come in here and you found that there's still work to be done and there's still opportunity here. And could you expand on that? Why that is? And is that true? I mean, yeah, it must be.
Absolutely. And that was the key word, opportunity. There's no question. There is so much opportunity. And it's just a matter of looking at things differently. And I don't want to make assumptions about the way people think, but it feels like that people are so used to doing something the same way over and over that they just can't look outside that box and think about, how can I do things differently and what are the opportunities that are out there? And much of the services or the bending metal or the things that companies have been doing for space apply to other industries. Right. That's the big thing. And there's no reason that Brevard County can't be about space, Department of Defense, energy, transportation, all those other industries and technology. And we'll support everyone.
I think the energy thing is a real key here, a real key opportunity for the Space Coast, too. It goes beyond just the space program. We'll touch some more on that here. After we pause now, we're going to take our five-minute built-in hold at the bottom of the hour here, get you caught up on the latest news, weather, and sports. I usually say something about a football team at this point, but there's just nothing going on out there in terms of what we really love, right? Isn't baseball just sort of a distraction? Well, anyway, we'll continue talking with Carol Craig when we come back. I'm Jim Bank. You're listening to Space Talk on WMMB.
If you missed part of the show, catch the podcast, Space Talk, in the on-demand section at WMMBAM.com. Now, back to our own mission specialist, Jim Bankey.
Oh, if we only had the webcam up right now. Welcome back, everybody, to Space Talk. We appreciate you having back here. We're up here for our second half. Phone lines, end line, inbox open for your questions or comments. Phone number 321-768-1240. The email address, spacetalking@AOL.com. Before we return to our chat with Carol Craig, I want to once again reassure the planet Earth that our destruction is not imminent. As you may have been reading in the papers and online the last couple of days here, just to confirm, the asteroid 2012 DA14 is on a nearly direct course toward Earth right now. This coming Friday, 2:24 p.m. in the afternoon, our time, this asteroid about half the size of a football, weighing 287 million pounds, is going to miss us by 17,200 miles above the surface of the Earth, basically passing from the south to the north. And what's interesting about this, and we've talked about it before, is that our communication satellites at geosynchronous orbit is 22,300 miles up. Now, the space station is about 250 miles up, so there's really nothing in this particular region of orbital space around the Earth that this asteroid can hit. But you just realize how close it is. Now, it won't be big enough for us to see with the naked eye. Telescopes, both visual and radio, will be locking onto this thing, and we'll get some neat pictures and try to learn some more about this asteroid. It was only discovered a year ago. So, they figured out, they looked at it, figured it out, made sure the orbit was okay, got a little nervous, and then realized, no, it's going to miss us. And so, we're starting to see headlines like, it may hit us or we're just barely going to miss it. Well, yeah, in cosmic scales, it's a near miss, but no issues whatsoever. Its orbit is very well understood. If it did hit us, it's not a big planet killer. It's about the size of the asteroid that they think exploded over Siberia back early in the 20th century, which wiped out a lot of trees, but not much more than that. Of course, if it hit downtown Manhattan, it'd be a whole other story. And as I've said before, if we did have an asteroid aimed at downtown Manhattan, you would see us with a space program that would be unbelievable in its scope and magnitude and in a big hurry. So that said, Carol Craig from Craig Technologies, after we scare you with planet Earth destruction, yeah, we welcome you back to the program. We're talking about your company's involvement here on the Space Coast, and you're doing space stuff that's pretty neat, and you're doing it out of, we talked during the break that you're doing stuff for some different NASA centers, and rather than have you explain it, we were going to invite Carrie Beam, who's here in the studio with us as well, who is their communication specialist, and apparently Carol thinks can speak better than she can or you can. Tell us a little bit about what you mentioned, that how Craig Technology is involved with some of the other NASA centers, for example.
Yeah, thanks, Jim. I had the good fortune of going up to see our team at Langley, and it sounds pretty rudimentary, but what they do up there is actually maintain the servers that host all of the multimedia that NASA generates on their NASA.gov website.
Okay.
So, you know, all of the space nuts out there who are grabbing photos and videos and all this multimedia, you know, our Craig Technologies family members are up there making that happen.
Carrie, the official term is space cadets.
Cadets. Well, I'm a nut.
You're a space nut.
So
we're going to get you a certificate to turn you into a space cadet. You mentioned something about Johnson Space Center, too, that the human space flight program is part of something you guys support.
Yeah, this is actually out of this world, and I still am amazed at it. But our folks there, one of them actually won a Silver Snoopy Award for her work because she works with astronauts one-on-one to train them to use the video recording equipment on the ISS.
Okay.
So, you know, the videos that you're pulling down from NASA.gov that our folks are maintaining on the servers, well, our people are also helping to capture those videos by training the astronauts how to use the video cameras.
Very cool. Very cool. And so this is examples of kind of the support work, Carol, that you were talking about, that your company provides this expertise. Again, fulfilling special needs, if you will, almost in different areas of the program. It's much more than just space. It's defense and technology, too, and you even used the word energy earlier. A lot of this stuff that you are enabling yourself to do to support, you're doing in this new facility, this old new facility.
That's right.
The old United Space Alliance Shuttle Logistics Depot. I never thought I'd say that. The old Shuttle Logistics Depot. You guys you've turned it into this aerospace and defense manufacturing center, which means what? You bought it, you own it, you're leasing it, you rent it, and you're remodeling it?
Well, right.
Tell us all about it.
Yeah, pretty much. Well, it came about from a Space Act agreement. NASA is looking at ways to do business more innovative and do things differently. And so they took a look at this equipment that was over there in the old NSLD and thought, well, you know, what can we do with this equipment while we wait? Kind of, I think what they're thinking is while we wait for space to catch up, right?
Right.
And have the needs. And so they were looking for companies that would be willing to take on this equipment. They could do whatever they wanted with it and then maintain it and then maybe give it back at the end of 5 years, if that's the Space Act agreement's 5 years.
Okay.
We already had a machine and tool division that we had started, which is kind of a prototype shop, and thought, well, what the heck? We might as well see if this is something that we could mutually do together. And they said, yep, sounds good. It's a good company. So that's what we got. The Space Act agreement said, here you go. Here's 1,600 pieces of equipment. It's all yours. Now you're on your own.
Okay.
So at that point, we had to find a place to house it. We had to find out how do we keep that human capital and the knowledge, the people that can actually take that equipment and do something good with it. And we went into negotiations with the owners of the more old NSLD. It's not a NASA building.
Right.
It's actually owned by another company, group owners. And so we leased that facility, 161,000 square feet, consolidated all of our other headquarters and operations into that facility. And now we're bringing back a lot of that capability that was there to support the shuttle, to support other areas.
The 1,600 pieces of equipment you mentioned, was that shuttle equipment and processing equipment that you're just finding repurposing for?
That's correct. It was the equipment that was used to service the shuttle when it came back in an MRO type of capability.
Or MRO meaning?
Maintenance, repair, and overhaul.
Okay.
Sorry. Or maintenance, repair, and operation. There's different names for it. Right. That's what that was for. What we did, though, is then we purchased everything that United Space Alliance owned and was in that building. Combine that with the equipment that we had already had from our machine and tool. We had more, what I would call more state-of-the-art, newer equipment, lathes, water jets, things like that. Put this whole thing together, and now I honestly think there is nothing out there like it.
Well, let's review. So when the space shuttle was flying, orbiter would come back, and there'd be a problem or there'd be a part that just had to be serviced. It was time to give it an overhaul like you would your car, or there was a problem with it and had to be fixed. The part would come off from the orbiter processing facility, go down to the shuttle logistics. Well, I shouldn't say. Well, I mean, do we really call it the logistics depot
now?
No.
Or now?
Back
it's
then,
NSLD. Yeah,
yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah, and it would be worked on, and that means metal shops, workshops, fluids, electrical, computer checkouts, all that kind of just generic equipment.
Absolutely.
That was used for the shuttle parts, and now you can go build stuff, service other aircraft parts, do the same job with other equipment?
Everything. I mean, there's an avionics, a full avionics lab in there. I mean, all that applies to civil and commercial aviation, to military aviation. There's a anechoic chamber, which is for testing satellite signals.
For sounds, yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. There's an environmental suite. There's a shake and bake. So you've got vibration tables. You've got thermal testing. All that capability, those things that you would normally had been used for space applications now can be used for anything we want them to be used for.
I love that facility and its history. And if you don't mind, I'll just try to quick tell this little story, you know, about how it kind of originally came to be way back when. Mid-80s, I think it was, shuttle ramping up. NASA needed the capability to do this. Didn't really have the money or the facilities to do it on base. They wanted to build there. People didn't want to build there. There was partly a whole temporary versus permanent culture going on at KSC still at that time. You know, everything was temporary. You always come to the Cape, launch, and then you leave. So we never had any permanent facilities there. And there was always a cultural mindset not to really build anything permanent beyond the basics like a vehicle assembly building and a launch pad. So how could we do this inexpensively and put this all together? And so there was this proposal, these owners, to build this facility, which became the depot. But they were hedging their bets. They hedged their bets. They said, well, if we're going to build this thing for now and NASA eventually builds a facility at KSC, then what are we going to do with this empty building after we're done with it? So planning ahead of time, you're shaking your head, you know what the story is. Planning ahead of time, they built this facility that you're in doing all this high-tech stuff as a strip mall. Yep. So that you could come in with a Bells or, you know, a whatever afterwards and fill all these bays where all this high-tech stuff was going on for shuttle and literally turn it into a shopping center. Mm-hmm. And, of course, it never happened. We never built a facility out of KSC. They never did that. That facility ended to the end of the program, and now you guys are taking it over. Your legacy continues.
Right, absolutely. We have the giant Walmart now.
The giant Walmart, so you can shop and work at the same time, you know, or whatever.
Yeah.
Well, it's so cool. So beyond space, talk some more about it, because it is defense and technology. You mentioned energy. Who else are your customers? What else does the Space Coast have to offer these other industries?
Well, thinking about the Space Coast as a whole, that's probably even more beautiful part of this. So we do these things in this in our ADMC, but we don't do it all. So we need vendors, we need support, we need other companies. I don't think people realize how many great companies there are already embedded here in the Space Coast. Mm-hmm. And part of that, when you're a small company, it's hard to take the time to get the word out. You're doing specialty types of things. And I think that it's a great opportunity for all of us to work together. And with our, even though we're a small company, we have this nationwide presence and a mm-hmm. lot of different customers. We're able to be an extension, I think, for some of these smaller companies. As we get work, we're farming it out to them. Same kind of thing. They're all doing the same thing. So that I think that's what makes this so unique as far as the Space Coast is the opportunities. Not just there for me, and it's not just an opportunity for growth. It's an opportunity for the entire community.
And just with a quick yes or no, the Florida Economic Development Commission type opportunities, tax things, business incentives, did all that help you guys set up here?
No, we hadn't.
Oh, really?
No, when we came down here in 2004, we did it on our own.
You did it on your own?
But I didn't know about EDC.
Well, I need to follow up on that. It's very interesting. We're going to take our final break of the day. When we come back, we will check in with our weekly local launch forecast. We'll wrap up our conversations of the day, and we'll pose our five terminal count questions, not only to Carol Craig, but since she spoke up, to Carrie Beam as well. We'll be back in just a moment. I'm Jim Benke. You're listening to Space Talk on WMMB.
If you missed part of the show, catch the podcast, Space Talk, in the on-demand section at WMMBAM.com. Listen to Space Talk on the web at WMMBAM.com.
And welcome back as we begin our final segment of today's edition of Space Talk. With your reminder, you can stay in touch with us online throughout the week. Your first stop, of course, is just mentioned, WMMBAM.com, keyword Space Talk, where you can find links to an archive of past Space Talk shows and text versions of orbital inclinations. You can also follow us online with Twitter at Space Talking. And as, you know, required by law, there's a Space Talk page on Facebook that you can like as well. All right, taking a look at the next launch from our shores, it is still targeted to be a SpaceX Falcon 9 rocket. with a Dragon spacecraft bound for the International Space Station as part of that company's cargo delivery service contract with NASA. The shot remains targeted for 10:10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time on March 1st. As you might remember, the last Falcon 9 launch had some problems with it during the climb uphill that resulted in one of its nine first-stage Merlin main engines shutting down. So there will be a lot of eyes watching this mission very carefully, but everything looking good so far as part of the normal pre-launch activity for the Falcon 9 as usual. During the next couple of weeks, we'll expect to see that rocket moved out to the launch pad and test firing of the engines conducted. If all goes well with that test, the launch will proceed on March 1st. Also, please be aware that another major NASA launch is scheduled this week on the West Coast at Vandenberg Air Force Base in California. And the United Launch Alliance Atlas V rocket is to carry a NASA Landsat Earth Resources satellite into polar orbit. Landsat has been a very successful program for many decades now. The launch time Monday, 1:02 in the afternoon Eastern Time. They're already predicting a 100% chance of acceptable weather during the 48-minute launch window, something that we never see here at the Cape. In fact, I think the weather guys specifically never do 100% because they're worried it's going to jinx it for sure, and we have evidence to prove that. In any case, we wish our friends at United Launch Alliance who traveled out west all of our best wishes. We hope to get them back home very soon after a successful launch. For more information about these and all the various other launches scheduled around the world, jump on the web to WMMBAM.com, keyword Space Talk, and look for the link to our launch forecast. Okay, we're talking in the studio today with Carol Craig, president, founder, CEO, CFO, if I've missed anything else, lawn keeper at one point, I think, of Craig Technologies, and Carrie Beam, the communications specialist for the company, and clearly an articulate young woman, right? Nah, she's Carol, we're talking real quick just before we go into terminal count. Mm-hmm. I asked you about Florida incentives. It's so important every year at this time of year. We go to this legislative session in Tallahassee, and we're always asking for more money and more incentives. And you said, surprisingly to me, that you did this all on your own, but yet EDC remains very important to what you're doing. And talk quickly a little bit about that.
Absolutely. They're very important. So for the last 8 years, we've done all this on our own. We didn't have the advantage of tax incentives. Actually, and I didn't even know about any of that. But I have had the advantage of being a part, an investor with EDC. So the networking that we've gained from that, the support from the community is very, very important. And I do know that things are changing a little, and EDC is really looking at existing companies and what are the programs, and they've received funding from the state recently. And I know there's a lot of that where they're looking, they're giving opportunities to companies that are here now, existing, not necessarily coming in, to get more advantages from EDC. So it's a good program.
Give us a plug, or Carrie, maybe this is more appropriate for the communications specialist. How can folks learn more about Craig Technologies? What's the website, and are you hiring?
We're always hiring.
Hiring.
That's true. We really are hiring. We're looking for really skilled workforce, aerospace, defense. Doesn't matter what your background is. You know, we are growing, and it's internal engineering. You know, communications specialist. Come on, tell us,
Carrie. What else?
Well, we are hiring good people, and you can follow our Twitter feed for our careers. It's Craig Tech Jobs on
Craig
Twitter.
Craig Tech Jobs.
Craig Tech Jobs.
Okay.
And we also have a LinkedIn group. It's Craig Tech Opportunities, I believe, or Craig Tech Careers. You should be able to find it from our...
I think Craig Technology search engine would be everything you need to know, right?
That's right.
Yeah,
that's right.
That's great. That's great. Okay, ladies, it is time now, as you've been waiting all hour, for Terminal Count, our feature at the end of Space Talk, in which we'll ask you five simple questions to get to know you a little bit better. This is not a quiz. There are no right or wrong answers. This is not a contest. So please, no wagering. All right, we'll start. We'll just do each one. Carol, coolest rocket?
The one that my brother and I set off in our backyard.
Oh, really?
Many, many years ago.
Do you remember the name of it?
I don't remember the names. I just know we're lucky we didn't lose fingers.
You didn't use like a fuse or anything, did you?
It was one of those things that you shouldn't have been doing.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Not appropriately following the National Association of Rocketry Safety Code.
That's correct.
Okay. This is not something you should do at home. Please follow NAR regulations at all times. Use an electric igniter and electrical launch system at all times. Maintain 10 feet safe distance. I know them all.
I'm taking notes.
Take notes. Carry coolest rocket.
I actually think it was the Atlantis lifting off for the last time.
Space Shuttle Atlantis.
Because I was on the Coast Guard cutter, Kingfisher, in ocean, watching from offshore. They were the patrol boat, and I had a seat.
How far offshore were you? Do you know?
it wasn't that far. In fact, we were so close in, ground control asked us to move because they couldn't lift off. We were too close.
You were a little too close.
Yeah.
What was that? Oh, that must have been so weird. That's a, such a different angle.
It was insane. I think I have one of, you know, very few pictures of the shuttle on the pad lifting off from the water.
From the water, so. From that view. You know, they did, back in the early days, I got to say this fast. Back in the early days, they did a night launch. And the guy did a streak shot where you hold the shutter open, and he was on a boat offshore, and you could see this thing flying all over the place because the boat was rocking.
Amazing.
It was really neat. Carol, first launch you saw or remember?
John Glenn return.
Really?
Yeah, I was in Jacksonville, stationed there. I was on the 10th floor of our apartment building, and my friend and I were out there, and we could see the
You could see the shuttle go with John Glenn on board. Yeah. What a neat day. Carrie?
I think it was actually one of the shuttles returning. It was my first time in Florida, and the sonic boom at 3 a.m., I thought a bomb had gone off, and I remember that clearly.
Wow. Carol, most prized space memorabilia. Have you collected something yet?
I've gotten a whole bunch of things that have been to space and back, but it's those shuttles from the Astronaut Foundation that I bid on and won.
Oh, you won one.
I had three of them. And one of them has all the signatures of the astronauts.
Oh, those are great little statues.
It's in our lobby at the Aerospace and Defense Manufacturing
Center. Oh, really? Can a guy just walk by and peek in the window?
Absolutely.
Carrie?
I think it's a photo of me sitting in the cockpit of Atlantis.
Oh, beauty.
Yeah,
that was a neat opportunity. That happened when I was out of commission, and I couldn't do that. Carol, best space TV-related, space-related TV series or movie?
I'm more about the books, so Isaac Asimov and Ray Bradbury, all of them.
Anything?
iRobot.
The Foundation trilogy.
All of them. Read every single one of them.
Wow.
Or WALL-E. I suppose that's the movie.
WALL-E's not too bad.
But I'm about the books.
Okay, that's good. I appreciate that. Carrie, what about you? Favorite space movie TV series?
I Dream a Genie all the way.
I Dream a Genie. Good for you. Good for you. Spoken like a true Floridian, right? Okay, real quick. Moon, Mars, or Beyond?
Moon.
Go real fast. Okay, Carrie.
All the way.
All the way. Okay, well, that's it, guys. We are actually rapidly running out of time here. I want to thank everybody for being on the show today. Space Talk, a production of Mila Solutions, brought to you thanks to the help of our supporting sponsors, Space Florida, Boeing, Abacus Technologies, SpaceX, United Launch Alliance, and Lockheed Martin. My thanks to Sean Williams for manning the ops station for today's program. Please join us next Saturday at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for a couple of guests from the Florida Space Development Council, a local chapter of the National Space Society, 2 o'clock next Saturday afternoon. Stay tuned now as WMNB presents a weekend edition of the Glenn Beck Program. I'm Jim Bankey, and we will talk to you again real soon.